First to six.
No, I stand.
Stand? Okay, so let me get your extender. Lean on or?
No.
No?
We have a stick also? No, we don't have, huh? This is not really the kind of shit I record.
No?
It's
no, but I think we could put this online also. We could put the PowerPoint online afterwards. People could download the audio and the video. They could follow along. So you're saying
we don't have any regular a real rule of here, right? So we have a real lulav here now. A real lulav in Asperger here now. What? Okay, so mate, what? Yeah, I know, I can. So no yashuka echtel, it's hooked up. Be smart, no yashuka echtel, it's hooked up. Yeah, but I'm just saying, the parts in this. Okay, Rabbi Isai. Do you want to go to start the other way this time, or? No. Okay, Rabbi Said, we're going to start with the lulav. So firstly, we have to understand that the truth is probably better with the lights off, no? Yeah. Okay. So, everybody can see? What? Okay. So Rabbi Said, first of all, just so we know, la'alocha, what's what? The center here, the dark green that you're looking at, the middle, that's the shadow of the lulav. Over here you can see it better as it ends. That's the shadow of the lulav. Okay? So, when we talk about a lulav being split, for instance, yeah? So some Rishonim hold that a split lulav has to be split all the way into the shadra. That is almost never, you're never going to find that, almost, in a lulav. You almost would have to pull it to make that happen. That kind of, even if you bang it against the ceiling, usually the shedra stays intact. So those who learn that in order for a lulav to be possible, it has to go into the shedra, that really limits almost all situations. Almost not possible to have a possible lulav for that reason, for the shedra reason. There's various rishonim as far as what to look at the top of the lulav. Some Rishonim hold that in order for the lulav to be possible, all of these leaves are taken into account, all of the leaves coming out of the lulav, and therefore we measure all of these leaves, and if you have 70 leaves, so in order for it to be possible, you'd have to have 35 plus, you have to have 36, 37, 38 leaves split for it to be a problem. That would be a very split lulav. So in other words, according to many of the Rishonim, the lulav is only going to be possible if most of the leaves on the lulav are split. Okay? In that case, it would take a minute for anybody to look at a lulav and to see it's not split. And again, 99.99% of the time, you're not going to have a split lulav. That is the sheet of most of the Rishonim, that's what it takes to make a lulav possible. You'd measure all of the leaves, all of them, and it has to be more than half of the leaves are split. And more than half of the leaves are split most of the way. That's a really destroyed lulav. Okay. There are some Rishonim who hold that the middle leaf, which we call the Tiyamis, that's not the Shedra, that's the last leaf that comes out of the Shedra. Right here, this leaf that comes straight out. Right here. This leaf. Well, right here it's this one actually. Yeah, this one. That's the Tiamis. That leaf is the one that we look at. And therefore that leaf makes us decide that the lulav is possible, even if it doesn't have roiv of the leaves. And that is Rashi Shita. And that's the reason why we're so busy with the lulavim, is because we're looking for that the Tiamis. The Tiyamis could be confusing for many reasons. Number one, sometimes there are two Tiyamis, and sometimes there are three. Sometimes the lulav ends with three leaves. Very often the lulav ends with two leaves. I mean, when I say very often, I'm saying 25% of the time. So two teyumasin are not rare. It's very common. Three is a little more rare. If there are three, then the center one is the teyumas. Okay? If there are two, then we're machmer to treat both of them like the teyumas. There's a chazanish that's mekel, that if you have two teyumasin, you could actually be machshert with one being sealed. Right? There's a machlekes. But we're machmer that if there are two coming out, but two means exactly at the same place they're coming out of the shedra, then we're machmer to give the chumras of the teyemis to both, to make sure they're both sealed. So halacha l'maisa, number one, we're machmer like Rashi Shita, because the Ramah tells us to be machmer like Rashi, which is to go by the middle leaf, number one. Number two, we're machmer like the Mishnah Berurah, not like the Chazanish, that if it has two teyemisin, that both of them should be sealed. So really what we keep today is a chumrah, agabi chumrah. Chumrah number one is that we're being machmer that we go by the center leaf, which is Rashi Shita. The reason why we're machmer like that is because that's what the Ramah tells us, that the minig is to be machmer. Chumrah number two is that we're machmer that even though many of our lulavim have two teyemisim, right? They have two leaves going up at the same spot. We're machmer that both those leaves should be split, should be salad. Now, what's called salad? So this is a big machloikis. Also, what's called salad? What does it mean, not split? Some learn split means all the way down, like we said at the beginning, all the way down into the shedra. That means if the leaf is even mostly split, or even entirely split, but it doesn't go into the spine, right? So we'll just split like this all the way down, but as soon as it hits the spine, with this red mark is, if it's split only till there, then it's kosher. It would have to be into the spine to make it possible. Some Rishonim hold like that. If you hold like that, again, it would be very rare to find a pasul luluf. Very rare, but that's what some Rishonim hold. And the simple reading of Rashi sounds like that's the way he holds. But there are machmirim who say no. Number one, you have the Vilna Goyen, who says it goes by roiv. So you measure from the top of the lulav till the spine. And if it's 4 inches, so it's got to be over 2 inches split, right? If it's 10 inches, got to be over 5 inches split, okay? That's roiv. Roiv of the leaf would have to be split in order for it to be called split. And then you have the bigger machmirim, who hold even a little bit, and a little bit is qualified by most as a tefach. So really, the maximum chumrah for the lulav is that it should be sealed up to less than a tefach from the top. If you have that, you're almost clear according to all the shitas, except there's maybe, you know, das yechidim. There's a lashon haritvan, who would say that even a little bit split is a problem. But even that opinion, I explained this to the Talmidim as well, it sounds like it's only because they're concerned that it'll get split more. It's not that they're worried about a little bit. It's that once it's a little open, it's going to open even more. So therefore, the suggestion I gave, and I'm giving this to all of you as well, is that if the lulav is a little bit open on top, glue it. Because now, according to Roiv Rishonim, it's kosher even if it will be split. According to Rashi, it's kosher because it's mostly closed. According to those who say it's got to be all the way closed, since it's less than a tefach, it's all the way closed. So you're pretty safe, right? So what are you thinking? Well, maybe there's this Ritva, and he says a little bit, but the Ritva only says a little bit because it may split more. Now that you glued it, it's frozen where it is. And that's what I do with my own lulav. I put a little glue, even though it's not split at all. I put a little clear glue on top to keep it from splitting. You have to make sure that when you do that, you don't glue the leaves together. Because then, according to some opinions, you're not yoitze the shaking of the lulav, because the leaves have to shake. According to some, the shaking of the lulav, this is something to be makpid when you shake your lulav as well, is that you shouldn't just move your lulav back and forth, which some people do. You should shake the lulav as you do it. Because some hold the ninuim are supposed to be done just by moving the lulav. And the Goenim hold, it's got to be shaking the leaves. So the right way to do it is as you're moving it to shake the leaves, Yetzel L'Chaladeus. If this is glued together, the top is glued together in a way that the leaves are together, then you're not doing the Nenuim. So therefore, you should be sure that if you do place some glue, it should only be on the center leaf, and the other leaves should have free movement. The other leaves around it should have free movement. So, b'kitzer, halacha l'maisa, the lulav should be closed all the way, preferably less than a tefach. If it's more than a tefach, that's the best lulav you could find, but it's still less than most of the leaf, you can make a bracha on that lulav. If it's less than a tefach, you could definitely make a bracha on the lulav, even l'chatchila. And the only recommendation would be to do something to the lulav. If it's a drop opened, that it doesn't open more. That's, I'm sorry, what was the question?
If it's naturally together, like stuck together, we should pull them apart?
Yes, that we discussed with the Kaira, which you want to move down to it or to... Okay, we'll explain this in a minute. We'll move.
What's the matter of having the mice fully, a lot of the wall we look for fully closed all the way? It's known as like a hiddur.
So again, that hiddur is if we reject the Taz, who says that less than a tefach is like it's totally closed. I feel, which is what I'm saying with the glue, that if it's a drop opened and you glue it, then you have even that advantage. The only other advantage would be if you move to a hymnic, which we'll get to in a second. Okay. Good. Okay, so here's another, these are more pictures of the top of the lulav. Different conditions that you have very often on the top of the lulav. Now, Rabbi Valinsky asked, what's the advantage at all to find a lulav? Because you could find, if you're willing to settle for a lulav that's a little open on top, I'm talking about 1 inch, right? 1 or 2 inches, you're going to find a lulav much faster. Much faster. I mean, when we were checking lulavim last week, almost all of them were good. Very few were more than a tefach, right? So what are we really, what's the advantage of finding a lulav that's totally closed? The advantage is, number one, if you reject the taz, but that I feel is a shvach taina, especially with the glue. But there's a different advantage, and that is, if you notice, by all of these lulavim, besides that they're opened, they're also a little bit apart. In other words, you could have a lulav that's split, but the leaves are sitting, the two sides of the leaf, the two parts of the leaf are sitting very nicely, one on top of the other. You could have a lulav that's split, where the leaves are apart, as you see over here. They're apart from each other, right? So in that situation, that's a suffix hymnic. Hymnic is a condition that's brought down in the Gemara, which basically means that if the top of the lulav looks like whatever hymnic is, right, it's that type of tool, a fork, so the lulav now becomes puzzle for that reason. That would mean that this is another problem. Not that it's too split, but that the shape is a problem. Similar to what we'll see by an esrog. If you have a round esrog that's like a ball, it's puzzle because of the shape. So this condition could make the lulav puzzle, not because it's split, but because of the shape. And that would be another, just to address Rabbi Valinsky, but another mile, if you have one that's totally closed, you know you're not running into that problem. Okay, I told the boys that when I was a bacher, and I used to look for a lulav just for my father and myself, I used to always be makpid, even a drop, if the top had a drop of an opening, a drop, literally a drop, I would look and look, and it took a long time to find. But my hymnic...
Glue on top.
No, glue's not going to help you. My hymnic chumrah shifted as I became a rav, and I had to start picking out, instead of 200 lulavim, I would have to start Motzei Sukkos for next Sukkos, and by then it would be a lulav ayovish. So we pass all dried out. It's not shayach. In other words, if you hymnic, even the dairy, what they call the dairy lulavim, which they charge another $20-$25 to get a dairy lulav, even them, some of them are not, they, even when they're closed, they look a little bit like 2 points on top. And just, I've had people bring me several of them, And I'm very makbid. On the dairy lulavim, I'm very makbid. Because I feel if somebody's paying an extra $20 or $25, so he shouldn't have any kind of questionable tap, then he shouldn't have any questionable tap. So actually, a guy came to me right after Yom Kippur with a lulav that was almost Mr. Kirshner. Almost. I mean, it was a dairy lulav. I sent him right back to the moicher. So if you're buying a dairy lulav, then it should be, if you're spending $25, not to have such a condition. So there is an advantage of finding a lulav that's totally closed, because then you don't run into this doubt of perhaps, now glue is not going to help, because glue only helps you when the two leaves are sitting next to each other. But when they are growing apart, that's this condition. You could put glue here, but you're still going to have the condition that the two leaves are growing apart from each other. And for that, the glue doesn't help. For that, the glue doesn't help. So this happens to be that this condition that you're looking at here, these pictures don't necessarily qualify to be a himnik. Because according to Reb Shlomo Zalman and other poskim, and the Mahsham, in order to have a himnik, the two leaves have to actually go, not just be apart, but they have to go in opposite directions. You follow? So they have to actually grow like that, rather than just, they're away from each other. See here, by these lulavim, they're pretty much going in the same direction. They're just apart. They grew apart from each other, but now they're going like that. They're not going like that. So the Marsham holds, and Shlomo Zalman takes that view as well, it has to actually be going in different directions in order for it to be a himnik. So even though there is visible, whereas if there's no visible distance between the two, it's not a himnik. Everybody agrees it's not a himnik. It's when there is visible difference between the two, the split, where they're actually growing apart, then it's a questionable himnik. And when it's going in different directions, then it's a qualified himnik. Okay? This is a very complicated. In other words, this is there's nothing I can give you to the level of clarity that you'll be able to paskin on your own. I'm showing you what a potential problem can be. And that's the mile of a totally closed one, you're staying away from this type of issue, because if the two leaves are together, then they're together. You don't have a question of a himnik. If they're apart, now you have a question. Are they apart enough? Is it? Now again, there's a lot of svara to say like the Marsham and Rav Shlomo Zalman, because the Gemara uses the example himnik, and himnik is like a fork. It's a tool that actually goes in different directions. It's not a tool that's just a part. It's a tool that grows away, the two parts of the tool grow away from each other. Either a fork or this question exactly what tool it is, but it's clearly a tool that grows apart. So therefore, this and this, I wouldn't necessarily paskin as a problem, but if you see the top of the lulav has any kind of visible space in the way it's growing from each other, that needs a separate bedikah and a qualification to make sure that it's not a himnik. Okay. This picture here is just really showing you the distance of how far the lulav has to be. Now, I'm going to explain to you now also what regarding to the esrog as well, because this is all the same inyan. There, just so we understand, there are two kinds of psulim that we're going to be dealing with the lulav, with the esrog, with the hadasim, with the arovas. Some psulim have to do with hodar, and some psulim have to do with chasar. Okay? There's a big difference between the two psulim. Hodar is the way it looks. It's visual. Visual. And that brings on chumras. It also brings on kulas. Because since it's visual, since that's the issue, A, if the type of mark that it has would, let's say, be considered a normal that it should look that way, it's not a problem of hodar, number one. Number two, the Chassam Sefer goes on to say that if the marks on the esrog came from using the esrog for the mitzvah, that doesn't take away from the beauty of the esrog. Not a problem. Okay? The chumrah that it has is that it's puzzled the whole week. Chasar is puzzled the first day. Something which is puzzled because it's missing, that's puzzled the first day. according to most Rishonim, it's kosher for the rest of the week. Something that's possible because of Hadar is possible the whole week, even after the first day. So there are differences, but how you examine is significant, and it's significantly different between these two psulim. There are three ways of checking, right? One is the way this fellow was looking at it, and that is, we're calling it 12 inches, that's really what Rav Eliashiv held as well, holding the lulav approximately the way it would be if you were using it for the mitzvah. You don't bring it like that, you hold it like that. That's the normal distance that a person holds a lulav. That's the way to check it, okay? There's another way to check a lulav, to go like this, to look very, very close, and you could see something that you wouldn't see by holding it the regular distance. Then there's a third way of inspection, which some people do, and that is to take a magnifying glass to start superimposing, blowing it up to see what, to see whether that thing is, that area is infected, whatever the condition is. So now there's a big difference. A magnifying glass is never needed for any of the psyllium. Magnifying glass. People that use magnifying glasses, I don't know why they use magnifying glass. The only justification that I would say to a magnifying glass, first of all, you don't need justification. You want to use a magnifying glass, use a magnifying glass. You're not ruining, it's nothing wrong to use a magnifying glass. I'm just saying it's unnecessary to use a magnifying glass. Because halachically, anything that can't be seen without a magnifying glass doesn't exist. Okay? So something which you can only see with a magnifying glass doesn't exist. So it wouldn't make a difference if it's chaser. And this goes in all directions. All directions. That means it could come out of chumra, it could come out of kula. If there's a bug that you can only see with a magnifying glass, it's not a bug, halachically. If you swallowed it, you're not over. Yeah? If you have a sefer Torah, and you have two letters that are touching, and you take a magnifying glass, with a magnifying glass, you see they're not touching. There's a little space between the, right? Sefer Torah is still possible. Because since to the naked eye it looks connected, it's possible. The Tefel Yisrael says in Avodah Zorah, they found a fish, an exotic fish, that people wanted to eat. And when they came up with a microscope, they found that there were scales on it. And they were very excited. This exotic fish became mutter. Tefel Yisrael in Avodah Zorah brings down the fish's treif. Because if you can't see the scales to the naked eye, it's not scales. It's possible. It's treif. So, magnifying glass is never necessary. Never necessary. And it's fascinating that people bring a raya from a yavitz who actually inspected the minim with a magnifying glass. When he himself records it, he says, as I got older and my vision got weak, I used a magnifying glass. So he didn't use a magnifying glass as a magnifying glass. He used a magnifying glass to bring himself to regular vision. Because if he would look at it without that, it was a waste of time. Right? It's like I once had a rov came to me and he told me he doesn't like to look at Maris for Tumah because he's colorblind. I said, I don't think you should just not like to. And I met him by a chas and he asked me to look at a bedika. He says, you know, I'm not sure. I really, Be'emis, I don't like paskening because I'm colorblind. If you're colorblind, you shouldn't be looking at bedikas where it's color sensitive. So, Lamaisa, this distance that we're showing you here is for anything that has to do with Hadar. Okay? Any psul that has to do with Hadar, you hold it by the normal space that you would hold it. Now, by the split leaf, right, there are those who hold that that's chaser. If it's chaser, this is not enough. You have to hold it closer. So this distance only works for those things that have to do with hadar. So if you have a question, if the top of the lulav is dried up, we'll see other things, other conditions on top of the lulav, that is fine. But if you actually feel that the lulav is split, which according to some is a psul chaser, then that distance would not be enough. You'd have to hold it closer. You never need a magnifying glass. If you have healthy eyes, you don't need a magnifying glass. But if you're looking for chaser, you got to go all the way close. And if you're looking, and the same thing with an esrog. If you're looking for chaser on the esrog, you got to look very close. If you're looking for a mark, a blemish, you hold the esrog by the regular distance. You don't have to hold it, you know, right against your eyes. And I was witness to many times Rabbi Yankov checking his chogim. He would hold the esrog just like that. And people were very discouraged. They would spend an hour looking, picking out an esrog and just going like that. Then they come to Rabbi Yankov to get his approval. He was good. They'd be like, what? You know what's going on with it. That's the way he would look at it, the way you hold it normally. And there's many, many riyas to that. Because one of the reasons why the psul on top of the esrog is more chomer than on the bottom of the esrog is because you see it. Why are we more makbid with the top than the bottom? So Rashi brings down into other Rishonim because the top of the esrog is more visual. You see it? So the hoder has to do with the way it looks, which we'll get to as we go into the esrog. Okay, these are just more pictures. This is Kair. Well, this is also another. Is this two lulav or one lulav? I can't even tell. One. What? If it's one lulav, this is getting closer to a big hymnic problem. See, here we're going a little bit worse. This is all this brown stuff is common on lulavim. That's called Kaira, right? And very often this Kaira encrusts the whole top of the lulav. You'll see it. And whenever you see that condition on the lulav, there's a big debate how to treat that. Some feel it's good. No matter what, it's good. Because they view the kara as part of the lulav. So it's like the lulav's closed. Who cares if the leaves are closed or not? The kara itself is part of the lulav. So just like the Trumas Hadeshen brings down, that if something happens to the esrog while it's on the tree, we view that as part of the esrog. So if the esrog gets a hole while it's on the tree and then it keeps on growing, we don't view that hole as a hole. It becomes part of the nature and the natural makeup of the esrog. Some hold that the kara that's on the lulav is part of the lulav. And therefore it's closed. That's some. Some hold that the kara, the Bikur Yankov discusses this, that the kara would be part of the lulav, but there's a different problem. Now that it's closing the leaves, so you can't check it properly. Because the sheet is all the leaves have to move. No good. So he says, for that reason, it's no good. Because you can't be Mekayim, the shaking, properly. The Shevet HaLevi, Dayan Vosner, Zol Gesund Zayin, he has a different concern, that maybe under the Kaira, the Lulav is opened. Right? He doesn't view the Kaira as being a natural part. It's like you're being blinded. Maybe under that brown, he says, and since there's a mirt at least, that the lulav is no good, you have to check it. So there's a lot of different views how to treat this. Personally, I do not rely on kara to make a lulav kosher. So in other words, what I basically do is, if I find a lulav with kara, right, I remove, number one, I remove the kara from the side leaves. So the lulav should be able to shake to get rid of that problem. Number two, I remove the kara from the center leaf enough to a point where even if at that point on it was split, it would still be kosher. So I'm not relying on the kara to make the lulav kosher. I may be using the kara as extra security so it doesn't open up, but I would not rely on the kara to make the lulav kosher. So basically, number one, I split the kara from the leaves around the main, so it could shake. The only remaining issue is the Shevet HaLevi, that maybe the kara is closing it, and it's really open. So that, I take off the kara enough, let's say I go up to less than a tefach. I see that the leaf is sealed, till there's a way to see. If it's sealed, so now I know that even if it's split at this point, it's full kosher. So I'm not really relying on the kara for anything. Relying for the kara to keep it closed. Which is no worse than glue, it's much better than glue. So that's the kara situation. Okay? This is Kneplech. I'm sure you're all familiar with Kneplech. The Chassidim look for Kneplech. That's another hymnic situation there. These Kneplech, some people like them. And the reason why they like them is because some of the Rishonim, amongst them the Rosh, prefer the Kneplech. And that's because the Knepel keeps it closed. Okay? This is not an ideal situation, unless you have a minik to use a Knepel, because the Knepel also has a chsaron that some Rishonim hold that it's called a bent luluf. It's a luluf okum. A bent luluf is no good. But many Rishonim hold bent means the shedra is bent, not the top of the leaf is bent. So therefore, the Rosh holds that this is good, and once it's good, he holds it's preferred because now it stays closed. It does shake. Because it shakes unless all the kneplach are intertwined. But if each one is a knepple, yeah, sometimes you'll get a knepple that's totally geknepled. That you're right. But if you just have a situation like this, it's really just a safety feature. But I just want you to understand that a knepple is not just a safety feature. It's a safety feature with a question mark. It actually looks like a question mark. It is a question mark. Okay? The knepple is a question mark because there are those who hold it's no good. You could rely on the Rosh, and if you have a minute to use it, it's fine. I'm just saying, I would prefer to use a regular one, and if anything, I'll glue the top. Keep it, have the same, you know, security to the top. Okay, let's go right to it. That's right. This is better. Okay. First of all, these are different parts. I'll just get familiar with the Esrig, okay? Obviously, this is the bottom of the Esrig. This is the top of the Esrig. Question is, which part is the top of the Esrig? There are different opinions. First of all, we know that the top of the Esrig is more machmer than the rest of the Esrig. In order to make an Esrig puzzle in this part of the Esrig, okay, you need to have two qualifications. Number one, a shimi mara. Shimi Mara means a mark on the Esrig that's considered not from the natural skin color of the Esrig. So for instance, a brown mark is considered part of the Tzuris Esrig. A black or red mark is not considered part of the Esrig. So if you have a black dot on the Esrig, a true black dot on the Esrig, it's a problem. Sometimes the black dot is just dirt or it's something that got sunk into the skin and it's not really part of the Esrig. Then it's not a problem. But in this part of the Esrig, in order for it to be pasul, it would have to be on a majority of the Esrig, covering a majority of the Esrig. That doesn't mean that a majority of the Esrig is marked. It means it covers. If you would take a line, do you have a picture of that too? No. No. So let's say you have a mark here, okay, and a mark over there, and another mark over here, right? Three marks. And you took a marker went around those dots, it would be most of the circumference of the Esrig, then you have a problem. Right? So if the Esrig, if going around the whole Esrig would, let's say, be 4 inches, and if you take a pen and you go from the marks that you have on the Esrig, you wrap around all three of them, and now it's going across 2.2 inches, that would be a problem, because it's royal with the Esrig. Now, there is a Chazanish. Mogen Avraham holds that's enough to be a problem. So if you had one mark here, another mark here, and another mark somewhere after this bend, that would be a problem, because it's covering more majority of the circumference of the Esrig.
You have to connect the dots.
What?
You have to connect the dots.
Connect the dots. If after you connect the dots, you're covering most of the Esrig, it's a problem. Chazanish holds that it's got to be the bottom as well. So it's got to be the width and length of the Esrig. So according to Chaznish, you'd need a situation where you had a mark here, a mark over there, and then a mark down here. And now you're actually going most of the Esrig, both in its width and in its height. Then it's a problem. We're machma like the Magen Avraham. Okay, Mishabur is machma like that, so machma like the Magen Avraham. So, that's over here. On top of the Esrig, even one dot, one visible dot would make it possible. Now the question is, what's called a top? Okay? So some hold that the top is like here, where it starts turning into a crown. So the general, the belly is not part of it. None of the belly is considered a sensitive area. The belly is no problem, right? It's only where it starts going sharply on the incline. That's where it's called. Some hold that it's even more than that. It's the part over here. It's the final crown where it starts bending on top. This is not. And then there's a very machmas shita that holds from here already. From when you go to the center of the Esrog and it starts turning in, that's enough to be machmer. So I'm generally machmer, again, once it goes beyond anything which is here, I still consider, I discount. But anything which is already beyond here, over here, if I made a line up from the narrow part on the bottom, that I'm machmer on the top. So I look at a larger area of the tops. In this one, it would actually be about where it is. Sometimes it could be a little lower to check for the top of the esrog. Now, anything up here, if it qualifies, number one, if it's a black visible dot, make it possible, potentially. And even if it's not black, but if it's visible, many of the poskim, including the Primei Gadolim, say it's an inyan to be machmer on the top of the esrog. So again, if it's not really visible, then I won't be makbar on it at all. If it's visible miyad, then even if it's not shimi marad, there's a hider. It doesn't make it possible. In order to make the esrog possible, you need to have a mark, a blemish that's a shimi marad in the esrog. On the bottom part, it would have to cover most of the esrog, depending on the various ways. Now, so that's that. Now, white spot is also a problem, but I will tell you that most white spots bizmanenu comes off. In other words, I would say, let's say 70-80% of the time that I see white spots on an esrog, they come off. They're not really part of the skin of the esrog. But if you have a true white, is considered a shini marad an esrog, and it's possible.
How does it come off?
Wash
it?
What?
How does it come off? Washing it?
Yeah. Or even a Q-tip. Yes, so they have the sefer that you had, brings down from Reb David Feinstein. The Reb David Feinstein said a lot of the black dots that they have today are actually, coming from the outside. And they're getting embedded. In other words, it's not really a skin condition of the esrog. It's embedded. I'm not makel with that because I have a very hard time discerning. What I do is I run my nail on the esrog, and if I see even part of it comes off, then I'm makel. Because then to me that's... But if it's already embedded in the skin, I have a hard time making that judgment call and saying that that's not, that is... There could be people that would feel comfortable with their, chusharia, but I don't rely on that. Okay, now, these are different parts of the esrog. Obviously, as we explained, the top part of the esrog is the most machmer. This is the pitim. And this is the oikets on the bottom. Okay? And these are the different parts of the inside of the esrog. So there's something called chasar, right? If the esrog is missing. If it's missing, just a little bit of the outer skin is not a problem. The truth is, even if there's a dent going into the esrog, but staying around here and not penetrating deep into the esrog, technically, that's okay. Okay? Technically, in order for it to be chasar, it's got to go all the way to the inner part of the esrog, which is called the Chadrei Azera, where the seeds are. There's actually three components. There's the outer, the shine of the shell. That's the glitter elyon. That is non-halachic. If you're missing a little bit of that outer skin, it's non-halachic. Then there's the skin itself. Okay? The skin itself also has minimum of a problem if it's just missing the skin. The basar, the flesh, is really a problem only if it goes deeper. But the problem is that when you miss a piece of skin, usually it creates a shimi mara. It creates a different color. Even if it's not right this minute, it's going to be shortly a different color. And then it's going to be kompasal for shimi mara. So very often you may say it's not a chasar problem, it's going to be a shimi mara problem. In fact, some soichim, they take a toothpick and they scratch off the blemishes that are on the outer part of the shell, which technically should be okay. They're keeping the shell there, they're just taking the outer part, should be okay. Made the esrog beautifully clean. Yeah. The problem is that those places where they pull them off with a toothpick, now they start turning brown and black. because of it. Now the Shinimara evolves from that. And then it could become possible, even though it's not possible al Chosar, it's going to become possible al Shinimara. So that's something to stay away from trying to get the marks out of the Esrik. If the mark's a problem, it's a problem. If it's not a problem, better just leave it than to try to get rid of it. Now, how much of the Pitim and how much of the Eikets has to be missing to be possible? There's a, people have a mistake, it's a myth that they think that this is not sensitive. And they're wrong about that. If this totally came out, the bottom came out, it's possible. Okay? Most people think this is okay if it comes off, it's only this that we care about, the Pitim. It's not true. The Pitim is more of a sensitive piece. Falls off quicker. The Eikets is harder, you need a better drop for the Eikets to fall out. But if the complete Eikets falls out of the Esrik, it's possible, according to most opinions. So, right? You can't even make a bracha. Chacham Tzvi says you can make a bracha, but many old, if the Eikets came out, even b'dieved, you can't make a bracha. Now, the difference between the Pitim and the Eikets is, number one, the Pitim does fall out much easier. By the way, there is a hider that these two should be parallel to each other. So that sometimes you'll see an Esrik where the Eikets is here, or the Eikets is here, and the Pitim is here. The symmetric element of the Esrik is measured by the Eikets versus the Pitim. So that's something to look for in an Esrik. Okay? Sometimes people look at the sides. The sides are less critical than looking at the whole entire Esrik from here to here. And making sure, this is what I was told in Yeshiva about, making sure that the entire Esrik. Now, another, just once we're on this topic, another thing to look for is, what do you do if one side goes like this, and the other side goes straight, and then it turns? So the question is, where is the top of the Esrik? Okay? So there are actually three possibilities. One possibility is the highest part. So in other words, envision, I don't know, do we have another picture like that? Oh, here, this is good. Stop right there. Beautiful. Perfect. This is perfect. See this one? Now, if you look at this Esrik here, that's a little bit of a funny shape. See here, but technically, the Eikets and the Pitim are pretty symmetrical. Right? They're not that off. Right? It looks pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty symmetrical. The actual Esrik is a little lopsided. Right? But here, if I was looking at the top of the Esrik over here, it would be right here. Yet on this side, it starts going in over here. So what do I do if I have a mark over here? Okay? Is that considered the top or not the top? This is a big machlekes. There are actually three opinions. One opinion also goes by the highest point. The chaitim is the highest point. In order for something to be a nose, it's got to be an acclaimed nose from all fronts. If on this side it's not a nose, it's not a nose. I, over here, it is a nose. It's not the top. The top is only the tippy top. So if on one side the Esrik is like this, and over here it's going in, this part of the Esrik is not going to be the top. So you'd only have to be sensitive about the marks on top here. But a mark that will be found over here would be okay. Others hold no. Others hold that the opposite. It goes by the first point. So anything above this point, on either side, so we make the line like this. And now if you have a mark over here, even though on this side it's not the chaitim, since on this side it is, it's going to be possible. Right? Others feel, and this is what I think is most logical in halacha, is it depends. On this side, this is interesting, before we didn't get a chance to go with this. On this side, if you find a mark here, it's possible. On this side, if you find it, it's kosher. Okay? So it goes by actually where it is. On this side it's a nose, on this side it's not a nose. So if you found a mark over here, on this side it'll be kosher, right? One mark. If you found one mark over here, a black mark, we pass. Because over here it's a nose and over here it's not. Why am I saying that's most logical? Because if the nose would be a chumra because there's a din in the nose, right? Then we could start analyzing, what is the nose? What's if it's a nose on this side? But we said from Rashi, the chumra of the nose is because that's where it's visible. Because when it turns in, so over here this is visible. And over here it's not visible. So The logic is to attack the mark on this side, you have to be machmir, and the mark on this side, you could be mekel. And that's the way I would do halacha l'maaseh. So what I would end up basically doing in this situation is I'd be making the line like this. Okay? And that's anything above there will be treated as the chayt. Okay? So that's as far as that's concerned. Bechlal, that kind of an esrog is obviously not as good as getting an esrog that has a nice, smooth, you know, top, you know, where it's more symmetrical. This is the condition of the oikets and the pitim falling off. As I've said, if the oikets falls off completely, and this picture, it's a little bit unclear, but if the entire stem falls out of the esrog, then it's possible. You have to treat it like an esrog as possible. Which, by the way, this color could be a problem too. My son-in-law just brought me an esrog from Eretz Yisrael. It's a beautiful esrog, without a mark, but it's even darker than this color. He tells me a lot of the esrogim there are that color. That is a big question mark. Some hold that the Gemara says that if it's green like grass, it's possible. Kiyarki asode. Right? So there's a big debate. Well, this also looks pretty green. There's a big debate in Eretz Yisrael, it seems there's a lot of them. The green. So the question is that green, A, is the green alone a psul, which the Yavetz discusses. If the green is a psul, even if we knew that green would eventually turn yellow, but right now it's green, no good. Others say no, the green is no good because it signifies that the kli has not been matured. So as long as we know that this esrog is turning, it's going to turn yellow, right? It's just a matter of time. Then the pre is complete. So it's not the color that's the problem. It's the maturity that's the problem. And if that's the case, the esrog would be kosher. So there is a debate. Halacha l'maaseh, one should not use an esrog that is entirely green and doesn't show significant elements of yellow coming through. Okay, there's nothing wrong if the esrog has some green in it. But you should be machmer l'chatchila, not even l'chatchila, more than l'chatchila, that there should be some yellow coming through in the esrog. Okay. This is a spot. This is a brown spot. Okay. What? It's harder to see. This is the dot. Now, maybe you should go back for a moment to the last one. I mean, the one before that. Yeah. See, in this case, most hold, you see, many think that this is possible. Most hold that this condition is kosher. See here the pitim fell off? But since the dad is still there, that's the piece, the stem coming out of the esrog. See, even though the top part of the esrog pitim fell off, as long as the pitim is still coming out of the esrog, it's still kosher. And I'll tell you, so much so that there are those who hold that it's preferable to actually get an esrog like this than an esrog. Do you have a picture of an esrog without a pitim? No, I'm saying is it? Right here. Perfect. Okay. Let's say you have a choice to get this esrog, right, where no pitim is seen, and they tell you it grew that way, right? One second. That's what they tell you. Okay? The Meicher tells you it grew that way. Well, to get one like this, where you see that the pitim got damaged. Some prefer this to that. Why? Because they say like this. What does a pitim mean that the pitim grew like that? It's not 100% unanimous what that means. Some feel, first of all, no esrog, contrary to what some may think, no esrog grows without a pitim from its inception. Every esrog has an inherent pitim element to it. So what happens basically is the pitim falls off while it's on the tree. Question is, on what stage does the pitim have to fall out for it to be a non-issue? Right? So some hold that this pitim has got to fall out at the beginning of the growth of the esrog. Meaning, as the pitim is growing, it falls out. Not it grows a matured pitim and then it falls off on the tree. It's a problem. Some hold no. As long as the condition happened on the tree, it's not a problem. As long as you didn't pull the esrog off the tree and then the pitim fell off. Those are the two opinions. Obviously, if you hold that the pitim has to fall off right at the beginning, you never know that when you get by an esrog. When did that pitim fall off? Assuming that the pitim fell off, there is a, by the way, if the pitim fell off in the box, there's a way to find out. Besides that, you find the piece. There's a way to find out. And that is because if you look at the top, you could see if there's a freshness where the pitim cracked. You could see that. If you have any eye for it, you could see. Okay, and I could generally see if a pitim fell off after it fell off the tree. You could generally see. But to know if that pitim fell off when it started growing or it fell off after it grew and then it fell off on the tree, that is very almost impossible to know. So here at least you know what? I have a shtickle pitim on. So it's kosher. It's not a great pitim. It's not a glorious pitim. Okay? It's not Esther Malke. Okay? It doesn't have a Kesem Malchus Arishah. But the fact is it has a qualified pitim according to most Paiskim. So some felt it's better to get this than to get one that's pitimless. People feel good with a pitimless. They feel like it's bulletproof, right? But it's only bulletproof if that's what it was. Otherwise, it's dead. It's bulletproof because it's dead already. You don't want a dead Esrog. So some prefer this. Lamaisai, when I was a Bocha, I asked Rabbi Yankiv Zatzal. And he still felt it's better to get an Esrog that looks like it never had a pitim than to buy one that looks a shtickle like a balmum. That's how he felt, halacha l'maisa. So that's why I generally stay away from these kind. But I'm just telling you, it's noteworthy that there are those who hold that this would be better. A broken pitim with some of the pitim sticking out is better than a no pitim esrog. Clearly, if you're not worried about the pitim breaking, there's a hiddur to have a pitim on the esrog. Obviously, you're afraid for the pitim to break. So you have experience, and you're nervous. But if it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, a pitim is a mila. There is no such thing as a mila, no pitim. A pitim is part of the Siris Esrog. There's a mila to pitim. Now, the top of the pitim has actually what we call a shashanta. That's like you have the pitim, and then you have that almost crown on top of the pitim. That is even less problematic if that fell off. As according to most opinions, this is good. This is where actually part of the pitim fell off, but it's sticking out. Okay, so we'll move on. Yes, yeah, there is a... The shashanta is this thing up here. Okay? Now, on the dad, we're machmer, if there's a dad there, because that's part of the esrog. On the shashanta, we're not makbid. The esrog is kosher. Okay, let's move on. Okay, these are dots on top. This we are machmer on, if they're problematic dots. We treat it part of the goof of the esrog. Some feel as long as it's at a spot where you could technically cut it, and it would still be kosher. Huh? But lemaisa we're machmer. As long as it's on, we're machmer on that. Okay. This is a chazazis. This is a problem. This is a growth on the esrog. It's called a chazazis. This is a problem. These are what they call bletlach. You see? This is getting close to the white. Do you have a real white one? You know? These are... This is what they call a gartel. Okay? A gartel, again, it's similar to a knepple. It's some people look for an esrog with a gartel. It's not really a mila if you don't have a minig or something for it. Because this gartel really introduces several problems. Number one, it's not the nicest gittel. Right? It doesn't have that picture that we saw at the beginning, the way an esrog should be. Number two, there are those who feel that an esrog like this, because it goes in over here, has double jeopardy. So now it's got to be clean here and here. It's almost like you're going through esrog shopping twice. Because every time the esrog goes in, that's another chaitim. So it's like you're getting a shidduch a girl with two noses. Right? Which most people would stay away from this time. But that's the matzav over here. So this color is not great either. But that's, so I would personally stay away from a god. You know, some people tell me, damn, the Zaydan, I'm saying it's I don't see a mile in it. That's the bottom line. Okay.
Can I quote the
rub? Bro. Especially today, Aiden. That's on the bottom, less problematic. Actually, many hold that these dots are bechlal not a problem because it's part of the tzura of a normal esrog that has dots on the bottom. These are the least problematic. This is not muhudr because the oikets is coming out of the side. And the oikets should come out of the bottom, like this. Okay, let's try to maybe we can get some. These are problems, okay? This esrog. This is a white dot right here. Okay? That's a white dot. You guys got it? That would be a problem. That you do find that sometimes. This is a problem. Okay? This color happens to usually not come out. It's the very bright white, like almost, you know, almost snow white. That usually is not a problem. Not because the color is not a problem, but because this is a problem. Now, the shape of these esrogim are only b'di'evad kasha, because they are getting close to being like a ball. Kadur is possible. They have some oval element, so we can't call it puzzle. Do you have a real ball here? I think you do. That's a beautiful picture. That's it? See, something like that shape, okay, in an esrog would be a problem. You have any more pictures, or that's... That's no good. That is a lot of chitims. Okay. I'm just thinking whether I should give another half hour tomorrow night on Adasa Menachovitz. It's better than crashing it now. So, you know, tomorrow night, not everybody, because to crash now in one shot, tomorrow night I'll give a shiur on Adasa Menachovitz, how to pick Adasa Menachovitz. Same time, after Mechamah. Shkesh.